I realize the session's over, so if people feel they want to go, that I certainly won't be offended. I had three different talks during this session, so I've been running from hotel to hotel to back to here. And unfortunately, none of the three could be rescheduled. So if you want to stay, great. Happy to do it. And I'm not in a rush to get out of here. It's actually a fairly brief talk.
If you want to sort of say something about yourself,
yeah,
go ahead and do it.
So my name is Martin Donahoe. I'm a physician. I practice internal medicine part-time. And I teach courses in the School of Community Health, the English Department, and the Women's Studies Department at Portland State. And I work as a science advisor for Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility's Campaign for Safe Foods, which is trying to keep biofarming out of Oregon. And I also started and managed a website called publichealthandsocialjustice.org, or just phsj.org. It's a open access source for PowerPoints, lectures, curricula. It's mostly me at this point. There's about 75 of them on there, and I'm trying to get input from more faculty and students. Feel free to share the site with your students and with others who might be interested in it. It has everything from environmental health to tobacco policy to reproductive health and violence and whatnot. And can everyone hear me okay? I can use the microphone. So yeah, this is part of a smaller PowerPoint that's on the website that covers flowers, gold, and diamonds. And I'll give you the specific reference for this talk at the end. So this is not my area of expertise, obviously, but this is an area that I became interested in just as part of the social justice in public health course that I teach. And it actually arose when I got married about 80 years ago, and we decided not to get diamond or gold rings. And then I found out that even buying flowers was often not a very good thing to do, both for human health or the environment. And I wanted to look further into these issues and teach students about them, B, decide how I could make purchasing decisions that were still in line with my values, that also were an expression of my love, and look more into organizations that were working to combat some of the environmental harms that floriculture and gold and diamond mining cause. And that led to this talk. So you may have heard the slogan, "Say It With Flowers." And of course, flowers are used on multiple occasions: weddings, Mother's Day, Valentine's Day. And flowers, of course, are great sources of beauty. They also have a long history of religious, folk, heraldic, and national symbolism. And today, the cut flower industry accounts for $30 billion. The major producers of cut flowers are Holland, Colombia, Kenya, Zimbabwe, Ecuador, India, Mexico, China, and Malaysia. And the world's largest producer is Dole Fresh Flowers, named after Sanford Dole, he who led the coup against Queen Liliuokalani when the U.S. government took over the state of Hawaii. The largest import markets for cut flowers are the United States and Germany. There are 190,000 people in developing countries working in floriculture, and Ecuador and Colombia, just those two countries alone, account for one half of all the cut flowers sold in the United States. Most of the profits from floriculture flow to large multinational corporations. These are often headquartered outside of the producing countries, and only a tiny amount is reinvested in local communities. The workforce is predominantly female. Has anyone ever seen the movie Maria Full of Grace? So Maria Full of Grace is a dramatic, very, very well done film and moving film that documents some of the horrors that you see not only in floriculture, but in the drug trade and in women trying to escape from poverty. This workforce works for low wages, essentially no benefits. They're all on short contract cycles, and child labor, as well as dismissal for pregnancy and unpaid overtime, are common. Labor organizers are harassed and workers are often fired for trying to form unions. And third-party contractors, to keep the name Dole out of the business, for instance, will shuffle workers from plantation to plantation to avoid paying any kind of Social Security and to inhibit union organizing. Floriculture has bad effects on the environment. Floriculture displaces crops that are grown for local food consumption and contributes to malnutrition in this way by increasing the costs of getting food to local stores, the transportation costs involved, and so on. Just to give you some general background of how this fits into a global picture, if you look at the amount of the world's work that is done, all work, including childcare, elder care, as well as the paid sector, women do 67% of the world's work, earn 10% of the world's income, and own 1% of the world's property. And certainly that imbalance is also seen if you go to communities that are involved in floriculture. Also, your average woman in a developing nation has to walk 6 miles a day to obtain fresh water, when she's able to obtain fresh water for her family. And so if you've got local crops being displaced, as well as depletion of the water table locally, people have to go farther and farther to find wells where they can get fresh, clean water. And this takes up women's time, and since women do the bulk of the water collecting, the food collecting and preparation, puts even more stress on women and the families. Workers are exposed to a number of toxins. In fact, flowers are the most pesticide-intensive crop known to man, and their growth in greenhouses increases ambient levels of pesticides well beyond what most public health authorities would consider safe. One out of every 5 pesticides used on cut flowers is banned or untested in the United States, and these pesticides are often carcinogens and almost always persistent organic pollutants or endocrine disruptors. Flowers carry up to 50 times the amount of pesticides that are allowed on foods in the United States. And the U.S. Department of Agriculture, while it inspects for pests, does not inspect for pesticides. So there's nobody clearing these flowers that come across the border that you're putting on the table that your small children might be coming up and sniffing or even biting and chewing on if they're at that age. This is typical conditions. This worker happens to be male. He's spraying this pesticide. Obviously, no protective equipment whatsoever. Waste is often dumped on site. The workers live, if they're doing well, in homes like this, but more frequently than not, it's just shacks. Well, the exposure to these large levels of large concentrations of pesticides makes it easy to understand that over 50% of workers have organophosphate pesticide exposure symptoms, which are cholinergic type symptoms for the medical practitioners of you in the audience. These tend to be things like sweating and hypersalivation and nausea and vomiting and confusion and generalized weakness. Floriculture workers often suffer also from a number of health complaints, including allergic reactions to the pesticides in the flowers themselves, heat stroke from the high ambient temperatures in the greenhouses, pneumonitis, repetitive stress injuries by doing the same thing over and over and over again, such as dethorning roses, cellulitis or skin and soft tissue infections, bladder infections, because the women will frequently only get one or at most 2 bladder breaks per day, so there's a lot of urinary retention. Patients can develop neuropathies, again, from repetitive overuse and from trauma and leaning on an elbow all day or assuming the same position for 12-hour shift. Of course, they have mental health problems because of the nature of the work and high rates of cancer, as well as reproductive problems, including low sperm counts and a higher rate of spontaneous abortions among the women, as well as fetal anomalies among the children that are born to them. In terms of the pesticides, again, labeling, handling, and storage problems are rampant. Protective gear is often lacking, or when it's available is not working. And pesticide-saturated greenhouse plastic is often reused for domestic purposes, either as roofing or to cover a floor. And workers will often come home, wash up in the same sink that they use to prepare food or wash their children in. terms of recognizing and treating these health effects, local physicians are often poorly trained, and they simply lack the resources for even basic health care, not to mention managing some of the more common pesticide-related health problems. There's also a sense of learned helplessness and that there's not too much they can do because the workers continue to go back to this industry, and if they don't, they often, in some of these communities, have no alternate source of income. And so, despite the fact that they know they're suffering physically from this, they go back to work. Many of the providers are also employed by the floriculture company itself, which of course creates a conflict of interest. So what are the alternatives and solutions? Okay, just as with marijuana, growing your own is one way around this. Grow your own flowers. And then secondly, to purchase locally or internationally, excuse me, produced organically grown, labor-friendly bouquets. Ideally locally grown because it cuts down on the transportation costs and the greenhouse gases that result therefrom. Since these flowers are coming from other countries, they're often coming over on large jets, and this just adds to global warming. Buying flowers at local farmers markets, supporting local economies. Whole Foods has a number of local grown organically produced cut flowers, or you could go to proflowers.com or organicbouquet.com, neither of which is paying me or even knows that I'm mentioning their services, just as a complete disclosure. By the way, I have no disclosures. I do all of my website work and my writing on my own. I don't think there's anyone that would fund me a lot of the things that I have to say. So what else is important? Well, certainly consumer education and educating students, particularly students who ultimately will have the imprimatur of an MPH or MD or RN after their name so that they can go out into their communities and educate their patients and their students. Putting pressure on supermarkets, simply going into the supermarket when you're going to buy flowers and say, where did these flowers come from? Do you have any that are grown locally? Which are the ones that are in season? Putting pressure on florists also. In Europe, a number of boycotts led to a voluntary eco-labeling system for flowers that is followed by some florists. And then a number of NGOs are developing industry-wide standards that hopefully will be implemented soon. There is the Food First Information Action Network's Flower Campaign, which is developing an international code of conduct, which is voluntary. And then finally, the Veriflora certification system, which is the most well-known certification system. And this requires that companies, because are you, do you have a session that's starting here? Because, mm-hmm. What time are you starting?
Yes.
Okay.
We have 3 more minutes.
Okay. Veriflora certification. If florists sign on, they have to commit to organic production with phase out of pesticides, water conservation, safe management of their waste, mitigation of previous environmental damage, fair labor practices, fair wages, overtime pay, and the right to organize. And this system includes unannounced audits to ensure compliance. This campaign is focused on supermarkets at this point rather than florists, simply because there's fewer supermarkets and it's easier, therefore, to reach all of those who are selling. The bigger ticket item is ultimately getting to the wholesalers, and there's 1,200 nationwide wholesalers, and then finally the florists, but there's just simply too many of them to focus on in the early stages of this campaign. And then the major trade group, the Society of American Florists, has yet to endorse this. So another alternative is to consider homemade gifts, donations to charity, and even eco-jewelry that's made from other recycled materials by indigenous communities where the profits are returned to local communities, providing economic and social benefits. So to conclude, beneath the beauty of cut flowers lie practices that involve significant damage to local communities, human health, and the environment. And consumers and healthcare advocates should ideally work both individually and collectively for reform of the floriculture industry. This is the citation for the paper. That's the website. The paper is on the website as well as a larger PowerPoint that's open access, meaning you can steal it, use it with appropriate citation for whatever purposes you like. And that's my contact information if anyone would like to get a hold of me. And if anyone has questions, I'll just wait outside since the next group is coming in.
Thank you very much.